start by wishing John a happy birthday, and I'd also like to thank the organizers for having me here today. The work that I'm going to talk about today is joint work with Neil Lyle and Alex Rice. And so I want to start by saying that in 1936, Erdosian Turan made the observation that if you take a subset of the integers of the numbers 1 through n, the integers 1 through n, which has density at least 4 ninths, then you're guaranteed to have three elements in that set which form an arithmetic progression. And so with this observation began a long study of certain structural properties of subsets of the numbers 1 through n. And today I want to talk about part of that story that begins with the following question. So the question is, what is the maximal size of a subset of the numbers 1 through n that contains no non-zero square, perfect square difference? So let me first make some observations of some trivial bounds. So if you just start with the number one and apply the greedy algorithm, then you can show that there exists a set A, which is contained in 1 through n, so that the size of A is bigger than or equal to root n over 2, and A contains no non-zero perfect square. Yes, thank you. And on the other hand, you can see, I'm going to try to avoid grunting. So on the other hand, you can see that if you take a subset of the numbers 1 through n and you have more than one-third of the elements, then you definitely have a square difference. So the size of A greater than n over 3 implies there exists some non-zero value d, so that d squared is an element of the different set. And so what that tells us is that the threshold for square differences is going to be somewhere between root n over 2 and n over 3. Okay, so Lovaz conjectured that any subset of the natural numbers with positive upper density necessarily contains two elements whose difference is a non-zero perfect square. And the conjecture was verified independently in 1978 by Furstenberg and Sarkozy. And while Furstenberg's methods required ergodic theory and didn't provide quantitative bounds, Sarkozy actually proved a slightly stronger statement. So if A is a subset of the numbers 1 through n, so that the size of A is at least n times log log n, two-thirds over log n to the one-third, then we can make the same conclusion that there exists some non-zero integer d, so that d squared is an element of the different set A minus A. And Sarkozy's result was improved by Pinsteiger and Zamoretti. So let me just tell you the best current bounds in this, the best known bounds for square differences. So Pinsteiger and Zamoretti. In 1988, proved that it's sufficient to take A at least N times log N to the minus C, and now I'm going to beat the three logs we saw in the previous talk, log, 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 log N. Okay, so, anyway, and on the other hand, there's a construction of Ruja, which shows that, from a few years earlier than this, that shows that there exists a set A, so that the size of A is like n to the 1 minus 0.267, so that A contains no square differences. A minus A contains no square differences. No squares, thanks. Okay. No squares. Okay, so an open problem in arithmetic combinatorics remains to find what exactly the threshold is. But what I'm going to do in the next few minutes is shift gears a little bit to talk about other polynomial differences. So if we look for other polynomial differences, one natural place to start would be with higher powers, so case powers. And as it turns out, you can show that as long as the same bounds of Pinsteiger and Zamoretti hold, where the constant has to depend on whatever kth power you're looking for, then you necessarily, as long as A satisfies that bound, then you get two elements inside of A whose difference is a kth power. Other polynomials, for example, x squared plus 1, aren't good polynomials to consider, because if you, for example, look at the set of A's, so that you look at the set A to be all things which are congruent to 0 mod 3, then all the differences in A minus A are also going to be multiples of 3. And on the other hand, all integers represented by the polynomial x squared plus 1 are either going to be 1 or 2. Okay, so with that in mind, let me make the following definition. A polynomial with integer coefficients is said to be intersective if for every natural number m, which is at least 2, the congruence g of x congruent to 0 mod m has solutions. Yes.
Is there a conjecture about what the where the threshold is?
Yes. I guess the most often conjecture is somewhere around n to the 1 minus epsilon for every epsilon. Okay. So in 2000, So a result of Kamea Mendes-France says that if you have a polynomial which is intersective, then as long as you have a subset of the integers which has positive upper density, then you're guaranteed to get a polynomial difference. And in 2006, Lussier made that result quantitative. Um, So he said, if you take g of x to be an intersective polynomial, if A is a subset of the numbers 1 through n, so that the size of A is at least, now the constant depends on whatever polynomial you have, n times log n to the minus, to the 3 over k minus 1 log n divided by log n to the 1 over k minus 1. Then there exists some integer d, so that g of d is non-zero and g of d belongs to the different set a minus a. So in the case that we assume that g of 0 is a polynomial, in the case that we assume g is a polynomial so that g of 0 is 0, this was also studied by Lyle and Magyar, and it was with their work that Neil Alex and I started to investigate whether this bound could be improved. And so you notice that this bound is not so different from the look of Sarkozy's original bound. And so a natural question to ask is, can you apply the methods of Pinsteiger and Zamoretti to improve Lussier's bounds? And so recently, we've worked out all the details for the quadratic case. So we're going to assume that g of x is a quadratic intersective, and we're able to achieve the bounds that given that Pinsteiger and Zamoretti achieve in the case of square differences. So let me just quickly write down the theorem. Let g of x be an intersective quadratic and A be a subset of 1 through n if the size of A is at least n times log n to the minus c log n, then there exists some integer d so that g of d is an element of a minus a. Okay, so what I want to do in the time that remains is sketch our argument. So let me just do that. And this is going to be very broad outline. So we start with g of x, our intersective polynomial, and we're going to think of A as a subset of z mod nz. There's several ways to do this, but just naturally think of the natural embedding of A inside of z mod nz. And I'm going to fix delta to be the density of the set A. And I define sg to be the set of values of g of x which fall between 0 and n over 2. So basically what I'm going to want to look at is the values of the polynomial g of x, which have a chance of intersecting with the different set. Okay, so we assume our proof is by contradiction, so we assume that 0 is equal to the size of the intersection of the different set with the set SG. And then what we do is we count the size of the set in another way. And so to do that, this is the same thing as the sum over x's and y's in Z mod nZ, A of x, where A is the characteristic function of the set A of x plus y. And then we have to check that the difference y belongs to the set S of G. So this is y. And then we can write this as a Fourier analytic statement using this discrete Fourier transform. So this is n squared times the sum over xi's in Z mod nZ, A hat of xi squared, SG hat of xi. And then we separate off the zeroth Fourier coefficient, and we get a lower bound on the absolute value of that sum. So we just take off the zeroth Fourier coefficients, and we also apply the triangle inequality, and we get that that the sum over xi in Z mod nZ, A hat of xi squared, is times SG hat of xi, is bounded from below by delta squared, a density for each A hat of 0, times the density of SG, which is just the size of the cardinality of SG over n. Okay, so we started with a set A. See, I'm going to start on a new board. In the last few minutes, I'm just going to try to draw a picture that shows us how the iterative argument works. But I think I need some more space. Okay, so we start with our set A, which lives inside of Z mod nZ. And we transfer our information to this Fourier analytic statement. And then we use Hardy and Littlewood circle method to separate this sum into the sum over the major arcs plus the sum over the minor arcs. And so what we get is that the sum over the minor arcs we can absorb into this lower bound. And we can replace the sum here by the sum over the major arcs. Okay, so what does that give us then? Then we can use known estimates on the size of the Fourier transform when xi is an element of the major arcs. And we get that the sum from q equal 1 to epsilon to the minus 2, so here epsilon to the minus 2 is some parameter that we choose, which turns out to be some constant times delta, 1 over q to the 1/2, the sum over xi's in the major arcs with denominator q, A hat of xi squared, and you can show that this is bounded below by delta squared. Okay, and then we apply the pigeonhole principle, the standard argument. You apply the pigeonhole principle to show that there has to exist some q so that A hat has large L2 concentration. Okay, and then we use the work of Lussier to show that you can translate this L2, this large L2 mass, into an increased density of the set A, or some set that comes from A, on a long arithmetic progression. So there exists a long arithmetic progression P so that A intersected with P over the size of P has or I guess I should say A intersected with P has increased density. A intersect P has increased density. So by that, I mean I just look at the increased density on the sides of A. Okay, so I think I'm running over time now, so let me just, I don't have time to finish my picture. But what we do then is then we iterate back up to the top, and we can do all this with Lussier standard arguments. And then the observation of Pinsteiger and Zemretti is that perhaps this step here, where we go from this lower bound on the sum over the major arcs to an increased L2 concentration on some major arc is wasteful. And so what instead we do is that we assume that we look at the case where either we have a very large increased density, in which way we can run the same argument and get a better bound than we end up getting, or you look at a different case where instead of having some particular Q with an increased density, you see that there exist many Qs with an increased density. And from those many Qs, you can actually build more and more Qs, and you're able to iterate that argument. So that's where our bounds come from. So thank you very much.